You can tell it's a cold day.
The beautiful squeak of my boots on the driveway snow. I'm going to tell you something. Okay, so it's 9 degrees as we are talking right now. Mm-hmm. And we got an extreme cold weather advisory, cold watch, where we're living here in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I'm Heidi Holton. That's Charlie Mitchell. It's Season Watch. I get a little bit, what is the word, Charlie? Help me out here. So today happens to be my birthday. The weather.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I didn't want to say it like that, but my point is the weather is always like this on January 21st. So I'm not mad exactly. But I tried to be John Latimer.
Like the number of people who say I'm not mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who are mad are like above 50, but sure, you're not mad exactly.
I'm not mad at you, Charlie. I'm just disappointed.
No, that's so much worse.
I tried to be John Latimer. I figured there was somewhere online where I could find out what the temperature was the day I was born and where I was born in Minneapolis. So to look that up. And then it also had every year after that. But of course, I moved various places. So I had to kind of look it up.
Yeah.
The data didn't bear out what my memory is. So maybe we just don't need to talk about that. It always seems too cold. It was about 20... I think maybe even 30 degrees on the day I was born.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
According to this, I mean, it was, to be honest, it was a little bit of a fishy sight. It was, you know, it was kind of one of those where the highlights made it unreadable. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like 1997 internet. So perhaps it wasn't correct, but I'm going to try to embrace the squeakiness. How's that?
That works. Well, happy very cold birthday.
Thank you.
NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, whatever it is, has or had all that data running back years and years and years, which would be a more reliable site to find that information. But I also know like a lot of that climate data is disappearing. So I don't know whether that's still publicly available.
Okay. It's a good day to talk about nature and just to connect ourselves, right, with hey, it's squeaky out there. It's really cold. There's still stuff going on.
There absolutely is. And it's about to get a lot colder. So let's appreciate the 9 degrees while we've got them.
Yeah, true enough. Well, so this week we were glad to get kind of back on things with some student reports. We talked with John Latimer, another interview this week that got us really curious about nesting cavities.
Absolutely. That was a fascinating interview.
Up first, though, I think we should we take a listen to our friends from Little Falls?
Always. Happily.
This is
Mattia,
Cora,
and Olivia reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is a phenology report for the week of January 18th. With the warmer temperatures, more and more vole tunnels are being exposed in our yards.
We have had multiple red fox sightings this week all during the day, so we are guessing that mating season must be starting.
Two different people spotted woolly bear caterpillars this week, and we are puzzled by that one.
We did get to start exploring with a UV flashlight that we got from Charlie Mitchell. We looked at some lichen and are excited to see what other discoveries we will make this year with the new way of seeing things.
We have had observations of 4 chickadees chasing each other aggressively on a tree.
Speaking of chickadees, we learned that a number of D's in the chickadee DD call indicates the level of danger they are feeling.
An easy sighting this time of year are the trails left on old trees by bark beetles. They remind us of carvings or hieroglyphics.
There are 6 bald eagles spotted in a field, but we noticed it was close to a chicken barn, so there might be some carcasses dumped there.
A classmate brought in an owl pellet that she found at her house. We pulled it apart and found it was full of vole bones and hair.
We had another opossum sighting this week as one was running up a tree grabbing apples.
There are golden-eyed ducks hanging out in an open stretch of the Mississippi River here in town. It is a rare chance to see diving ducks around Little Falls.
This is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Well, Heidi, do you remember the difference between a pellet and a scat? Not to pop quiz you.
Yeah, no, I don't. Is it about what matter is included within there? I don't remember this.
Yeah, the pellet comes out the top, Oh. And scat comes out the bottom. Yeah.
Oh, so okay.
The
okay.
Pellet is all the dry matter, the fur, the bones, the other stuff that the owl can't digest. And instead of passing it through their whole digestive system, they just cough it up.
Okay, so an owl then only has a pellet or has pellet and scat?
Has pellet and scat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. All right.
Yep. So the meat and, you know, all of that stuff does go through their digestive system and they're still left over. So that comes out as scat along with their urine.
Speaking of urine, let's talk a little bit about mm-hmm. this UV flashlight and what it can provide. So you felt like these students needed this, apparently.
So this was a surprise gift that I got maybe 2 or 3 years ago from my father-in-law, which I know that people who are really into insects use UV lights to find them, like especially scorpions and stuff will like glow at night under UV. And people who are into mushrooms also are interested in UV, but it had never popped into my mind as a little gadget that I needed to have until I got one and started exploring. And yeah, these very nondescript gray lichens under UV glow like this beautiful gold, like vibrant, rich, luminous gold. Of course, I don't recommend taking it inside because that's how you figure out where the mice are. But I found that otter scat, at least when they're eating a lot of crayfish, that fluoresces. It turns like this really like neon yellow. I found these little aquatic snails that glow orange. It's just a whole new, yeah, it's seeing the world through a whole different lens that I hadn't really expected. And after we talked with Chad, I think 2 weeks ago, I was just inspired to send them that little piece of delight and see what they might find.
And it sounds like, I think John had mentioned that sometimes deer hunters are using that. They can kind of be following where the deer urine lights up.
Really? That's smart. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be a good, there might be some deer urine curiosity in my household. It might be a good stocking gift, but I don't know. One of those things, probably it probably is in my house right now, and I just don't know about it because this is the first time I've heard of this UV light. So others apparently know about it. But yeah, this is just another example of this curiosity and they're noticing all these things despite the midst of winter.
Yes. And, you know, especially in winter when things are a little bit slower, it's a good excuse to get outside and see things in a new light, literally, in this case. Now, my big dream, someone discovered... And, like, I'm sure this was just some naturalist out there looking for insects or something that had their UV on and saw a flash of pink going past. But someone discovered that flying squirrels fluoresce pink on their bellies. And it is my absolute dream to get a picture of that. Because all of the pictures online of flying squirrels under UV are, of course, copyrighted. And I want to get pictures in the newsletter and to show them to all my friends.
Charlie has a dream.
So someday, Charlie does have a dream to see a pine marten and get a picture of a flying squirrel under UV.
Yeah, have a lynx in your backyard for a week. Yep. All these things that could happen.
Not too much to ask, Heidi.
No, it's not. It can exist.
Okay. I believe. John Latimer had a bit to teach me about squirrels this week, too.
Cottontail rabbits are still fairly common. Red squirrels are out eating. I had a gray squirrel in my yard eating. We've talked about the competition between the gray squirrel and the red squirrel. We know that the red squirrels are much more aggressive because they have hidden food caches, and the gray squirrels tend to just go and eat when they are hungry. And they come to my feeder and help themselves to some sunflower seeds that usually the downy and hairy woodpeckers have spread around, because the my feeder, if they're not going to the suet, they get up in the seed pile and they flip their heads back and forth, left and right, and they scatter seeds everywhere. And at first I thought they were looking for a particular seed, but what I realized they're doing is they're searching for the nut, the meat of the seed without the seed coating on it, so that they don't have to hack their way in. They're sifting through the pile looking for those little unshelled meats, and in doing so they kick a lot of seeds off the edge, which makes the squirrels happy because then they get a chance to eat a little bit too, and the rabbits as well.
I loved that note about why red squirrels are so feisty. That's something that I've always kind of loved about them, is they're, you know, these tiny, adorable creatures that will take on a gray squirrel or a pileated woodpecker and just seem to have no fear, just all audacity. I love them. But that makes a lot of sense why they are that way, since they have all of these stored pine cones and stuff to protect versus the gray squirrels who are just kind of out, you know, foraging every day.
Foraging, but yet still leaping onto bird feeders. And the acrobatics of the squirrels is amazing, I think.
Absolutely.
When you think about how big they are relative to the birds.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. I mean, it really is pretty amazing. The heavyweights are competing with, like, the, you know, the smallest weights. And it's just, if you're, I mean, I guess I have Olympics coming on the brain or something, but it seems a little unfair.
Yeah. And yet some of those birds will drive off those squirrels no problem. I saw, you know, those tiny red-breasted nuthatches?
Mm-hmm.
Feisty. I've seen them chase off a gray squirrel. The size differential.
We talk about we want to be connected to nature and what it provides. It seems like what Season Watch ends up for us. But I hadn't really thought about that we're also learning character traits that we like, that we want. Like, I'd love to be called feisty all day long, you know? That's something I work towards.
Absolutely. Yep.
So we're taking cues in our own character from nature, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And I think, you know, there's a long and positive history of that. We've been inspired by animals for ever.
Yeah.
As we should be. Yeah, there's times when, like, I look at, like, a great blue heron just, like, standing still next to the river. I'm like, oh, I wish, A, that that was my life, and B, that I had the patience for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There's another thing. I mean, I think I'm thinking about in a new year, you know, if you let yourself think about the scramble of daily life and the amount of input coming at you. It's not quite, no one expert has to tell you it's not quite healthy, you know?
No. Yep.
And that we need to have more of that stand by the riverbank. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that John and I talked about this week was, or one of the student groups brought up that I was glad to hear again and be reminded of is sit spots. You know how you and I talked about, you know, when we began 2026, that maybe, you know, we don't need a resolution, but let's have some nature goals, right? To include more birds that we know what they are and, you know, we can name. But maybe it's also about, like, find that sit spot.
Yeah.
Somewhere you go back to time and time again. You keep watching. It was the first time I ever heard it was from the storied Harry Hutchins, who you never got to meet, but have heard so much about, and his Aldo Leopold benches, which John got into a little bit this week, and how much notation and how much time he spent on those benches and what it meant to him. And yeah, it's just, I think that's a really good idea, because sometimes we get in our heads that in order to experience nature, we got to keep going to different places.
For me, when I was thinking about sit spots, there were a couple places that really came to mind. One of them is just on the river near my parents' house. There's this big, big old glaciated rock that I'm sure was picked up by the glaciers, brought down here, and just left by the side of the river. And you can tell it was in place in the river when the glacial melt was happening, because there are these, for me, they're like these beautifully carved little footrests for me to put my feet on. But I'm sure that it was, you know, years of rocks tumbling against this huge boulder that made them, because they're smooth, they're perfectly carved out. That's just been a really nice spot for me over the years. You know, I went there when I was a teenager and having a hard time. When I lost grandparents, I would sit there. And, like, or, like, when I'm in a new relationship, I often go down and I sit there. And just been there and kind of feeling the solace of nature a bit. Mm-hmm. And of course, you see so many cool things, whether it's an eagle hunting or an osprey hunting, or in the winter, like the little otter tracks that come up from holes in the ice. But yeah, sit spots, man, they can mean a lot. And you get to see so many cool things from them. Do you have a favorite spot?
You know, that's, I was trying to think that. What this was making me think of, I don't think I've ever told you mm-hmm. about a local artist to the Grand Rapids area. Kristen Anderson is her name. And she does felted wool art. Mm. And it's mm-hmm. it's as if she's drawing nature with wool. And it's glorious, the stuff she does, you know. And she does mm-hmm. commissioned work and all kinds of different things. But in recent years, she's been creating sit spots that she sells. And I bought a couple of them. So it's rolled up mm-hmm. wool that looks like a river or, you know, it looks like a nature scene that you're supposed to take with mm-hmm. you. It's got a little piece of leather on it so you could hook it to something. I, of course, don't use it for that because it's really beautiful. It's a piece of art on my wall. But they're called sit uh-huh. spots or sit-a-pons. Sit-a-pons maybe is how she...
Yeah, sit-a-pons.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But same concept, you know, and that interesting thing of how it influences this act of what we're talking about influences people in different ways, you know, at hard mm-hmm. times, to make art, to pass it on to other people, mm-hmm. you know, those sorts of things. Like a sit-upon would be a great, like if we had all the money in the world for our phenology students, like everyone should get a sit-upon.
Right.
And a UV light.
I know. A lot of the elementary schools will do like a gallon-sized Ziploc bag with a bunch of newspaper stuffed in it. Mm. It's waterproof. Makes a nice spot to sit.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. A beautiful wool sit-upon.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, in the nicer weather, the deck is where I'm outside the most or...
Yeah.
You know, we go back to, sometimes I want to explore a little more when we're on the lake, but we go back to these few places again and again, and it's because mm-hmm. it's where the eagles have nested. There's other things we know were there the year before, so we want to check if it's still there. We're sometimes snowshoeing over to those spots now, mm-hmm. And this time of year. So I guess, you know, it might be lake for me a little bit more is what I'm paying yeah. attention to in those spots, and I didn't really think about it doesn't have to be a new thing, you know, like that thing you think, oh, well, we should be checking out this whole other part. And it's like, maybe not. Maybe that's just yeah. fine.
And parts of it are, you know, stuff that you've already do. You just like have a new term for it now. Mm-hmm. And like maybe you see it in a little bit different light. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love the sit spots.
So you got to hear some of the conversation we had this week about these nest cavity. Wait, no. How do we describe these guys?
Yeah, nest cavities with woodpeckers.
Yeah, and it's a new series, so we'll be talking about more species, critters that yes. need these nest cavities. But we had a chance to talk with Mike North from the DNR. I'm assuming this fascinated you.
Oh, absolutely. Right up my alley.
All right, let's take a listen.
They're woodpeckers of various sizes, obviously. What are some of the sizes of trees that they really seek out when they're looking for cavities?
Yeah, they do use a wide variety of sizes, but they really do hone in on a certain narrow size range. So, for example, for downy woodpeckers, if they're nesting in aspen trees, it's a 10 to 12-inch aspen that they're looking for the most part. If they're not in an aspen tree, then they often look for much bigger trees, ones that are greater than 16 inches. The hairy woodpeckers are looking for ones that are about 11 to 13 inches. The yellow-bellied sapsuckers about 12 to 14. And the northern flickers 13 to 15 inches DBH. That's the diameter of breast height. And then the pileates are using the bigger trees yet, typically 16 to 18 inches diameter at breast height. Aspen is the most important species in northern Minnesota for them to be nesting in. And they have different preferences for whether the trees are alive or dead. For example, in our study area north of Upper Red Lake between Lake of the Woods, we found that about 17% of the trees that downy woodpeckers nest in are live. The rest are dead. Hairy woodpeckers are really looking for live trees. About 95 to 97% of their trees are live trees. Sapsuckers the same, about 84% are live trees. Flickers like the downies like dead trees. Only about 35% of their nest trees are living trees. And then pileated's also like live trees. About 75% of their nest trees are live. And one thing that we found that was very interesting is that they like slow-growing trees. Not necessarily the pileated's, but the other four species like trees that are slower growing than average. And we didn't discover this until we started coring nest trees and other trees that were available for them on the landscape and taking those tree cores into a tree ring lab at Bemidji State University and actually aging them. And so putting a relationship to the age and the diameter of the tree together, they're finding these slow-growing trees to nest in. And I think those slow-growing trees are probably a stronger wood, so they're going to be more resistant to breakage and windstorms. The pileated woodpeckers, on the other hand, don't really care if it's a fast or slow-growing tree. They just want a tree that's of a big size, and that's what they're focusing on. So a couple different tactics that the woodpeckers are doing in selecting trees.
Isn't that awesome? I've always thought it was really cool. We had bird feeders growing up, and so I would watch the woodpeckers come and go, and just the fact that all of these different species seem to live together and visit, you know, they argue over who gets the feeder, but clearly all seem to get along just fine. And that makes so much sense because they're using these, they're partitioning up the habitat in these different ways. And I had not realized that about the nesting cavities.
This is where, you know, human nature is to think that these woodpeckers have thinking capacity because they're seeking out different things. But this is a whole different universe. It's not about thinking.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, these woodpeckers have been evolving side by side for millennia. And so it stands to reason that with that pressure from those other species, the ones most well adapted to living in that environment are the ones that can get along. I also thought that note about the slow growing trees, they prefer the slow growing trees, is so interesting. I don't know anything about this, so this is all conjecture, but if you think about what conditions form a slow-growing tree, it's ones that are shaded, and so ones that are in the middle of the forest. And those roots are all connected to the roots of all the other trees around them and kind of sheltered from the big winds and stuff. And so if I was a woodpecker looking for a place to put my precious eggs and my precious babies, having a really strong one would make a lot of sense, one that isn't exposed to a ton of wind, and one that's supported by much larger trees around it, all seem to like make a lot of sense for why you would want that tree.
Yeah, there was also some questions from John Latimer to Mike in this, and we also want to thank Mark Jacobs. You heard him at the beginning asking this question. He's the producer of these segments from Aiken County, but John asked if they ever are together in those nest cavities. And Mike had talked about they aren't like other birds that do that. You know, we were kind of thinking of it in terms of warmth, you know, that we'd be warmer if we were in the same nest cavity than if we were in separate ones, you know.
Yeah.
But also it's a whole other world. Obviously we use feathers to keep ourselves warm in blankets and things like that. Uh-huh. So birds kind of have, you know, they know what's going on in terms of warmth and stuff. But there's so many elements to that. And one thing that we have a lot of down trees and, you know, we keep them for critters. We take some out. We use some for firewood and stuff. But just that whole concept of all the different things, like you pointed out, that it's about fast-growing, slow-growing trees. It's about dead trees over alive trees. You know, just these really... There's so many decisions and things going on out there in the woods for these little homes.
Yeah. And they're good at it. They can find the right tree, and it's amazing. And then even within, so for instance, the downy woodpecker, even within the species of the downy woodpecker, even within a mated pair, there's partitioning where I believe it's the males will forage mostly on the trunk of the tree, and the females will forage on the limbs and the branches. And I think they both kind of switch back to the trunk during winter. But just the amazing specificity of these behaviors and the way they make it work. It's incredible. But I did want to talk a little bit about the like kind of four main species that I see at my place in winter: the downy woodpecker, the hairy woodpecker, the red-bellied, and then the pileated. The downy and the hairy are the ones that look most alike. They are small, black and white. The males will have a red patch at the back of the neck. But otherwise, they look so similar, unless you have them right next to each other. The downy one is smaller than the hairy one. And I think about, the way I remember that is like, downies, like if you think about it, like a little bird covered in baby down, they're small, and then like a big hairy man is the larger one. But if you look, I think the easiest way to tell them apart is by looking at their little beak. The downy woodpeckers are primarily, their diet is mostly insects that they glean from the bark of trees. So they're like hopping up and down the trunk and just looking for small things that they can just pick out by sight. And they do a little bit of excavating, but they don't have that big chunky bill the way that hairy woodpeckers do. Hairy woodpeckers are much more likely to excavate for insects underneath the bark. And so that's, it'll take a while of observing them to be able to tell them apart, but that's one way to do it. The red-bellied woodpecker, I think, kind of looks like a zebra on its back. It's got these really clear checker mark. And I think the red-bellied woodpecker is badly named. The people who named it clearly had a dead specimen in their hand and were looking at it and were like, oh, there's kind of a reddish blush on the belly. I guess we'll call it a red-bellied woodpecker. Will you ever see the belly of a red-bellied woodpecker in the wild? No, they're always like clung up to the tree with their belly hidden. But they do have like rather dramatic red on their head. But they're like more generalists. They will feed on the ground, they'll excavate, they'll glean stuff. Sometimes they catch flies, sometimes they eat fruit. Sometimes they eat other baby birds. But yeah, much more generous. Then, of course, the pileated is huge and dinosaur-y, and you can't miss it. We've got the smallest and the largest woodpecker in North America right here in our backyards. It's wonderful.
Nice. We don't have quite as many red-bellied woodpeckers. I have seen them here. But we do have flickers. Do you have flickers?
Yeah, in the summer we do.
Okay.
I know the red-bellied woodpecker is slowly moving north, but it must have just reached you guys. Yeah. In the summer we do have flickers, and they're so beautiful. They have such beautiful plumage. And I don't know, I think they'd be, maybe I stare at birds too much, but I think they'd be hard to mess up with the other ones.
Yeah.
But they like to ground forage. They have just this incredible, complex plumage, and I really like their calls. But yeah, I love the flickers. And then, of course, in the summer, we have yellow-bellied sapsuckers. Great name. Sounds like a pirate insult. You yellow-bellied sapsucker. And they're the ones that leave those perfect little holes in the trees for sap wells, where they drink the sap, of, especially in the spring, that sugary, delicious stuff, and that supports hummingbirds and insects, and they're a whole ecosystem provider for other forest dwellers.
Why are, you know, you wouldn't necessarily, I remember when I realized, oh, a flicker is a woodpecker and a yellow-bellied sapsucker, what makes them be in the woodpecker
group
family, do you know?
I mean, evolutionarily speaking, they share a close common ancestor with the other woodpeckers. But I would say, to my, like, in terms of experience, the ways that you can, like, see that they are woodpeckers, their flight pattern, woodpeckers like to, like, flap, flap, and then just kind of torpedo, and then flap, flap, and so their flight is kind of bouncy, I guess. Mm-hmm. And those two definitely fly with that pattern. They have the, like, very prominent bill. The other thing is woodpeckers are just incredibly adapted for trees. They have, here's a new good new science word for you, zygodactyl feet.
Oh yeah, that's not sticking.
Z-Y-G-O dactyl, D-A-C-T-Y-L.
Oh.
And so that means they've got two toes in front and two toes in back.
Okay.
And so if you're thinking about walking up and down a tree, you really want a good gripper in front and then a good brace at the bottom. And so that's why they have the two toes in back instead of, like, most songbirds have three in front and one in back. The other thing you'll notice is their tails. They have really stiff tails that are normally very dark in color. The added melanin in those tails makes them stronger. And because they use those tails as a brace as they're going up and down the tree so that they don't have to hold on as tight, they just kind of lean back and rest on their tails. And I think both flickers and sapsuckers, you'll notice, have those tails that are often kind of longer on the sides than in the middle, so it forms kind of a V shape,
right?
Upside down
pyramid,
yeah.
Shape, I don't know that the right way to say it. Well, the dactyl definitely lines up with your dinosaur comment,
yes, absolutely. Yeah, oh man, pileated's really just.
And the herons, you mentioned, yeah, too, feel to me like, oh my gosh, this is, we're in land of the lost. What are these creatures?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I think that they feel so dinosaur-y is that birds are, so if you look, if you think evolutionarily speaking, what we call the reptiles, the snakes, the lizards, the turtles, if you were to group those into what we call a monophyletic group, so it's a common ancestor and all of its descendants, birds would be in that group.
Okay.
They would be mixed in among the snakes. And the, and we don't because they look so different. But I think that's what gives them kind of that, especially around their eyes, that kind of reptilian, dinosaur-y like feel sometimes, is that shared heritage with all the reptiles.
So before we go, we've talked about a lot of things today. I think it might be kind of fun to, it's going to be cold though by the next time I talk to you. I was going to try to, you know, snowshoe out to some of these points or at least go into the woods. I'll go skiing a little bit because it's, you know, it's protected. It's not quite as cold, but pay attention a little bit to the, to what's going on outside, have almost develop a sit spot for myself, perhaps, even if it's on skis. So maybe others will do that too.
And sometimes a great sit spot is indoors.
That's true.
Next to a window.
Yeah, that's true.
I know, you know, one of my most important sit spots is more of a stand spot right next to the feeders. At my parents' house, like I'm so surprised there are just two footprints in their floor from me just standing, looking, you know?
So yeah, we want to hear from folks. You can use SpeakPipe. There is a link on our web stories. You can find it in the podcast platforms as well. But we'd love to hear if there's a place you go back to time and time again where you notice the changes. Tell us about the sit spot and maybe the sit upon you use or the stand spot, right?
Yeah, I would love to hear about spaces that are special to people.
This has been another edition of the Season Watch Podcast. It's a place for those who are curious. We delve into the delights of nature, and we want to thank those who were involved today.
Absolutely. We have, of course, our friends at Little Falls, Chad Kaditz and his class. Heidi recorded the snow crunch sound. Thank you for that. Mike North, who was our woodpecker expert, as well as Mark Jacobs, who produced the segment. And then the we're going to lead out here with a call from a red-bellied woodpecker. And that was recorded by Michael Urban in the Twin Cities area.
And as always, our thanks to John Latimer, inspiring us each and every week, right?
Yes, indeed.